Good afternoon and welcome to the Buckmaster Show. I'm obviously not Bill Buckmaster. I'm Ted Maxwell. I'll be hosting today. We've got Brandon Croft behind the glass, keeping me on time and on target. So we'll make sure to have a great show today. The Buckmaster Show's broadcasting from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. And any callers today will be joining us via the Buckmaster Live Line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. So today's the day before Thanksgiving. It's a day to reflect and a day to always think about the good things we have in our life. And so today, with this opportunity that Bill's given me to host the show, I'm going to highlight a couple of the nonprofits that I truly appreciate the work they do for the community to make this a better place and bring some joy and happiness into people's lives. Today, I'm joined by Natalie J. Rowe, who is the new Chief Executive Officer of the Community Feedback of Southern Arizona. Welcome, Natalie.
Well, thank you, Ted, for having me. So good to be here.
It's great to have you here. You bring over three decades of transformative leadership in the fight against food insecurity and a strong track record of innovation, collaboration, and impact. Natalie comes to us after 19 years with Second Harvest Food Bank of Greater New Orleans and Acadenia. I don't know if I got that pronouncement right, but she's proven leader, a team builder, and you arrived in Tucson in August. And what was the temperature 4th. On your first day?
113 degrees.
Okay, New Orleans to Tucson. How was that for a change?
A big change. But people kept saying to me, how are you dealing with this heat? And I said, well, I may be in my honeymoon phase, but I'll take 113 and dry any day. And you can go in the shade and be cool. I don't feel like I've got a wet blanket over me when I leave the house. I actually really welcome the change. It was great.
Well, you spent 19 years in New Orleans working there. You've also been with Feeding America and several other entities. So you've got with you a wealth of knowledge on food insecurity. What's the first thing you noticed about the differences that you're going to be facing in New Orleans versus in Tucson, Arizona, Pima County?
So, I've loved the 30 years I've had to work in this field. I started in corporate and was a volunteer and began a program in Savannah, and then the board asked me to consider becoming a staff person, and I was thrilled to do that. And it's just been a phenomenal 30 years because I get to see the best of human beings, a lot of suffering, but also the incredible generosity and compassion and communities helping each other. And I would say New Orleans and Tucson are similar in that they're both very caring communities and caring in different ways. You know, in South Louisiana, 70% of the folks that live there were born there. They're there their entire lives. Their families are there. They want to know what your high school is when they meet you because then they know your neighborhood. They know your priest. They know the grocery store you go to. So there's a closeness of that community because folks have been there for so long. Here in Tucson, people choose to come here. We have our Tucsonians, but we have so many people that are choosing to come here and make this place their home and really caring that it's a place they want to live in and that it works for everybody. So that was amazing. The first time I talked to volunteers, they immediately started asking me about the Farm Bill and public policy, and I wasn't used to that, but I was so grateful because they were interested in the issue of food insecurity. You know, how do we solve it long term? What can we do to help? It was amazing.
So how does the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona, both with its size and its service area, how does that organization compare to both New Orleans and some other ones that you've worked with in your career?
So it's a very similar size service area, more than 20,000 miles. South Louisiana has more chronic poverty, about twice as many people, 400,000 people that were food insecure in southern Louisiana, whereas we have about 200,000 people that are food insecure here. I had never heard the word frontier used as part of the census until I got here. We had urban and rural. Frontier is a new experience, and it's a very different level of urban. So we've always believed that everyone in our five counties should be receiving the same kind of services, but serving people here in Tucson is very different from serving people in Nogales and Ajo and all of the very, very rural parts of Southern Arizona that we work with.
Now, do you actually does the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona provide the manpower and the services at the locations, or are there partnerships that you work with other community food banks? How does that work?
A great food bank is all about partnerships. It is really our 150 partners in the field that are community-based organizations, and we have another 250 or so organizations that we partner with that are schools and hospitals, etc. So a good food bank always wants to respond to community needs and local community needs, and it's those agencies that are community-based that tell us what's really happening. How can we best serve? What level of service do we need? What kind of food do we need to bring? Is there a neighborhood that is a food desert or where people have less access to nutritious food? It's all about working with partners.
So everybody, I think, always hears about a food bank. That's where people can go to get free food. But there's so much more that you actually do out in the community. Can you, you want to highlight a couple of the programs that you found that you think are really successful, or maybe even a program that you want to set up and get started here as well?
So 20 years ago, I visited Tucson because it was a Feeding America food bank. I was looking for inspiration because that was just after Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. I really wanted to see what food banks were deeply rooted in community and were had programs that really were about resilience and helping a community thrive. This was the food bank that gave me inspiration. So I just feel so good about being here. And there's a long history here of rootedness in the community. It's when I got here 20 years ago, there was a nonprofit grocery store. They had already started their farmers markets. We have a farm. We have a garden. We teach people how to grow food. We teach people how to think about shopping for the most nutritious food for their dollars. There's so many things. We actually support other organizations. So we have a thriving communities program, and we receive grant applications from other organizations, and where we can help, we want to build those community partners that we have so much. We have La Caridad.
That's one of my favorite programs that you've got. So I'd love to hear you speak a little bit about that program.
It's, first of all, I mispronounced the name. I've been corrected several times. It's Caridad, not La Caridad.
See, you're trying to already get to the Spanish language where you want the La or the L in front of everything, and it doesn't always have to be.
And I, you know, one of my personal goals is to become fluent in Spanish while I'm here, because I just think understanding the culture and the richness, so much comes through the language. But yes, Caridad is an amazing place. It's a culinary training program. So we're actually helping people receive some training and hopefully finding them a job and overcoming some of the struggles they may have had with work. So there's a soft skills part of the course as well. I just went to a graduation last week. It's a 10-week program. It's incredible. We all cried all the way through the graduation service because each of these five graduates told their story, and this 10-week program really changed their lives. They were all employed. They all had a sense of self-worth and self-esteem that they did not start the program with, which was really amazing. They felt they could accomplish things. They felt like they could be their own best selves. And so I think, a food bank is hopefully helping people with their emergency needs today, but also wherever we can, providing the opportunity for families to thrive. That's why I love working with schools with our school pantry program, because the data tells us that a child that's well-nourished is better able to learn. So I love working with hospitals in oncology departments, for instance, where, you know, the doctors tell us that a nutritious diet is the number one thing their patients need to heal from cancer treatments of any kind. So wherever we can help a community thrive and be resilient, that's what I think is the job of the food bank.
Well, I think what I loved about Caridad is, and I've attended a couple of their graduations, is it's the community of the chefs.
Yes.
And not just that, you know, you've got your chefs that teach the course who run the program, but it's also the community and the those who have graduated will come back and tell their stories. And so those who didn't have that opportunity but looked at entering the culinary skills have come back and told their stories, and they're amazing.
Totally agree with you. I actually got my start in food banking because I worked with Hyatt Hotels, and my best friend was the executive chef in the hotel, and I could see the food going to waste 30 years ago, and we got all the chefs together. That was in Savannah, Georgia, and we started a program that's now nationally known as Kids Cafe by collecting all this leftover food. It's a beautiful, caring community, and you're so right. We had alumni come and speak, and their stories were really something. They remain close. It's a family, definitely a family. They care for each other, and they watch out for each other in their career, even after they leave the program.
That's the voice of Natalie Jayro, the CEO of, and I got the CEO part right. I introduced somebody the other day as an executive director when they were the CEO. So the CEO of the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona. Natalie, I don't know if you had the opportunity yet to go up to Mona's Danish Bakery.
I haven't.
Okay. It's a longtime supporter of the Buckmaster Show, and Mona's Danish Bakery is on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, and it's the home to the Danish Kringle and a wide variety of yummy European-style pastries. Mona's is open every day but Monday, starting at 7 a.m. Stop by and say hi to Steve, the owner, and then enjoy a lovely pastry and a cup of coffee or an adult beverage. So we'll be back with Natalie Jayro after the break. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show. Stay with us.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
A proposed $2.67 billion regional transportation plan will be funded by a half-cent sales tax if Pima County voters approve the plan and tax next March for another 20 years. The tax rate will not increase. Funding from the 2006 voter-approved plan is expected to bring a $3.67 billion economic impact to the greater Tucson region. The sales tax investment for RTA Next will lead to a similar economic impact and more than 48,000 additional jobs over the next 20-plus years. Learn more about RTA Next funding and proposed projects at RTANext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. I'm Ted Maxwell. I'll be hosting today. Brandon Croft is behind the glass, keeping us on time and on target, as I like to say, from my military experience. Bill is out enjoying New Mexico. And speaking of New Mexico, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico makes an enchanting getaway just 3 hours east of Tucson. Start your planning now for a great visit to Silver City by checking out their website at southwestnewmexico.org. So my guest this first half hour is Natalie Giroux, the CEO, new CEO of the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona. So we talked about how you arrived, Natalie, in the first segment, you know, in August, 115 degrees. You love the dry heat. So do I. So do most of the people around here. It's all great. And you walked into this new role with a new food bank after almost 20 years in the New Orleans area. Mm-hmm. Well, then the government decided to hand you another challenge. They gave you a government shutdown. And there's always concern that those who are hungry during a government shutdown even are impacted harder by it. How was it for the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona, and how did you handle it?
And actually, the challenges for the Community Food Bank started even earlier. Some of the unintended consequences of the DOGE cuts were cutting all discretionary funding by USDA. But, you know, the food that we receive from USDA, which is approximately 20% of the total that we get, that comes from a program that was a New Deal era program, and some of it is spot buys that USDA makes during the course of the year to help farmers keep market prices in line. Well, when all discretionary funding was stopped, that was stopped cold turkey, and I think you've heard stories of how farmers lost their crops in the field, and we stopped getting food. It meant that we lost about, you know, 10% of the food that we distributed, and we were busy replacing that, because the great news about food banks is that 80% of our support comes from the private sector, whether it's individuals that are contributing to us or doing food drives for us, or the amazing corporations like Walmart, Trader Joe's, Costco, all of the local grocery stores that give us millions of pounds of fantastic food. The volunteers that power all of our facilities, they're the equivalent of 100 full-time staff members. So we were working on bringing in more food, and now we have the government shutdown. We were concerned mostly because we didn't have the food that we had had at one time. But once again, the community stepped up. This is an amazing community. And we received enough money to purchase some food to make the food boxes we were distributing more robust. And the community continues to step up. For many people, the effects of the shutdown are not over. As we know, federal contractors are not being made whole, so it's going to take them a while to get their family finances back in line and back on track. And so, you know, for us, hunger is always an emergency. It's just looks a little different when there's a situation like a government shutdown, or in the case of Louisiana, hurricanes, which came all too frequently. And we're here for the recovery as well, because we want people to be made whole.
Roughly how many clients and members of our community do you serve monthly?
So we serve about 150,000 people a year. So probably about half of that are utilizing our services, not just through our own facilities, but all of our partners during the course of a single month. So 75, 80,000 people would be what I would estimate that we see. We really track things in terms of the number of times people come in. We call it incidents of service, and the amount of food that we're actually distributing. For us, that's about 35 million pounds of food a year, which is the equivalent of almost 30 million meals.
Now, when you say customers come in, I think some things that some people misunderstand, or your clients come in and or the community members come in. How much food are you able to give them monthly?
So we have a variety of programs. You know, we have, as we said, our government partnerships, and there are a couple of food box programs. That's TFAP, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, and CSFP, the Commodity Supplemental Food Program. One focuses on families in need. The other focuses on seniors in need. So when individuals come to see us in our facilities, we are qualifying them the same way they would qualify at any of our partners. So we talk to them about what their needs are. They testify to their need, and then we give them the amount of food that's appropriate for themselves and the size of their family. So they could come in if they're an older person or have an older person in the household and have their proxy. They could pick up a box for the older person. They could pick up a TFAT box for the family. And then there's the donated food. One of the things that's different about Arizona is this amazing produce, incredible produce. And right. So it's I can't even describe how good it makes you feel to see the abundance of good fresh food that we're able to make available to people. The one thing, one of the many reasons I love food banking is that we throw away as Americans a third of everything we grow, manufacture, process, and prepare in this country. There's no reason for anyone to be hungry. We're just a logistics operation using this food that would otherwise be in a landfill for good. And so for us, it's like a puzzle we solve every day, whether it's a government shutdown or the food industry re-engineers. Something is always changing, and our job is to try to do the best job for the people we serve always. Listen to them and keep on doing better, always improving, always learning.
And it's great that the food bank provides that opportunity to take produce, especially the amount of produce that comes from Mexico, the amount of produce that's grown in Arizona.
Incredible.
People don't understand how much of it does go to waste, but the food bank captures a lot of that, that the suppliers now know they can't get to the where they want it to go. And you get the opportunity then to add some special things to the boxes that you're able to give your clients.
Yes. And you know, the one sad, again, unintended consequence of the DOGE cuts was we had a program called the Local Food Purchase Program. This food bank has always done a fantastic job of working directly with our local farmers. But this program made it possible for all of us across the country to help our local farmers build markets, to provide real opportunities for them. Love that program. It was one of the smartest things USDA had done for many years. And again, it was funded out of discretionary funds, so it just went away.
Yeah.
So every time I get a chance with Congressman Siskamani and, you know, others, I tell them, please, 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 this is a fantastic program as we start to think about what we want to look like in the future.
And Natalie, I'll tell you, you've done a great job in your 3 months here now, getting out both with the elected officials. We first met at an event with to talk with Senator Ruben Gallego, mm-hmm. but also you're getting out and meeting members of the community. So it's that definitely helps build the bond with the food bank.
Oh, thank you. Gabby Giffords came and visited us yesterday. Oh my gosh, what an incredible human being! We are so blessed to have her in our community and her support.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that one. If you're interested in more information on the Community Food Bank, you can go to communityfoodbank.org, and that will take you to the website. So we've got about 3 minutes left, a little over that. What is it that you want to see improve out of the food bank now?
So first of all, this is a fantastic food bank with a great history, strong values. My job here is different than it's ever been before. I just need to get obstacles out of the way of these amazing team members, listen carefully to the community, and kind of like be a conductor of an orchestra, kind of just make all the pieces fit together and continue to kind of build on this rich legacy that we have. So for me, this is amazing. And again, the food bank is always as good as the community it serves. And this is an amazing community. So for instance, next week we have Giving Tuesday and we've got a match. And if you participate in anyone participating in Giving Tuesday, think about us. $1, we can turn into three meals. So we can be incredibly efficient with that. And community support is always going to make the difference about the level of service that we can provide.
And then obviously you can't go through the holidays without talking about Winter Haven and what the community food bank involvement out there happens.
I can't wait to see it. I've heard so much about it.
It is incredible.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. And of course, they do a food and fun drives for us. There's so many ways people can participate. So one of the many things on my list of things that I have to do now that I'm in this incredibly beautiful city with its own rich food culture. I love the way we start talking about 4,000 years of cultivation in this desert. It's incredible. And for me, as someone who's loved this business of the food system, this is a great place to be.
So you mentioned it. We have a food culture here. So what so far, because I'm sure you haven't tried all of our local dining establishments, what so far has place you've been, your favorite place?
Oh my gosh, it's so hard. Of course, you can't beat the Mexican food that's here anywhere. I love the authentic tastes of El Charro and other places. You know, I love the cuisine. We actually mill mesquite flour, and I've at our farmer's market every Thursday, you can buy mesquite cookies, and they are absolutely delicious. But I am, you know, there's so many restaurants that I've been to, and I love everything from the hole-in-the-wall restaurants. The city really does enjoy its food culture that has some local. I think I had the biggest breakfast I've ever had in my life here locally.
Now that's saying something coming from New Orleans.
Yes, it is. I actually had some friends from New Orleans come in and try, I think, a restaurant called The Bayou, and they came away from it and said, oh my God, the food was great. It's like you almost never hear that. Tucson's really incredible. Different from New Orleans in many ways, and even how they think about their food culture and coming from the desert and the Native Americans, and it's beautiful. Can't wait to continue. I'm going to go to Mona's, which you've mentioned, and I'm sure I'll hear some more names.
Well, Bill will be glad to hear that. So I want to welcome you to Tucson. That's Natalie J. Rowe, the CEO for the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona. You can find it at communityfoodbank.org, and I hope you have an outstanding Thanksgiving, and I understand your family. You're going to have, you've got brought family with you, and they're enjoying being located to the desert, wide open spaces. So that's great. Please stay with us as we come to the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we will be joined by Monica Kern with Youth on Their Own on the Buckmaster Live Line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property. You're listening to Bill Buckmaster Show. Stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. I'm the guest host for Bill as he's getting some great time and relaxation. As I teased earlier, he's probably out in the New Mexico area having a fun time, and he should be returning to Tucson soon. As I think everybody is aware, Bill's got a couple more weeks left on the show, but I do have some breaking news that I would like to share with everybody. On the 16th of December, Pima County will be giving Bill a proclamation declaring December 30th as Bill Buckmaster Day in Pima County. So congratulations to Bill, his whole team. His career has been long distinguished, and he's given so much to this community. I'm sure there will be much more recognition heading his way. But now, as we're the day before Thanksgiving, recognizing some organizations that do great work in our community and help those who need a helping hand to achieve things, I'm joined on the Buckmaster Live Line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, by Monica Kern. Good afternoon, Monica. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Ted. I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. So Monica Kern serves on the board of directors for Youth on Their Own, an organization that's dedicated to not allowing homelessness for much of our youth to prevent accomplishment, high school graduation, and putting them in a position to succeed in life. So Monica, first off, I want to take a couple minutes and let you kind of let our listeners know a little bit about you.
Sure. I am a certified public accountant, which is how I came to serve on Youth on Their Own's finance committee approximately 2.5 years ago. And I consider myself to be an honorary Tucsonan, as I moved here with my family when I was 16, attended Canyon Del Oro High School, graduated from there, and then attended the University of Arizona. And then from there, I went directly into public accounting and worked for a local firm, RNA CPAs, for about 8 years, and then continued my career in working for a publicly traded company and then in the med tech space. And now I am the finance director for Tucson Orthopedic Institute, and I also support the Total Orthopedic platform that they're a member of. So lots of fun that I have from an accounting perspective.
Well, Monica, I think with all that you've done in Tucson, I think you probably are safe to drop honorary, because you may not have started your life here, but being a CDO high school graduate, the university, and everything you've done since shows that you really are a Tucsonan. And part of what
thank you. I appreciate that.
And part of what you're doing is getting engaged and involved in the community. Youth on Their Own, a very unique organization. I've got ties to it, for full disclosure. My wife, Katie, is the chair of the board. But it is an amazing organization that truly makes an impact in this region. Can you kind of fill the listeners in on the mission of Youth on Their Own, some of the things they do to help accomplish that, and why it's an organization that you're willing to give your time, energy, and probably some of your money to?
Yes, absolutely. I'll start by letting you know how I became acquainted with Youth on Their Own, or as it's also referred to as YODO. I found out about them more than 10 years ago. I attended one of their fundraising events while representing the firm that I worked for at the time. And I heard a testimonial from a YODO alum, and I remember the visceral impact it had on me. Her testimonial really made clear the gravity of the challenges that these youth endure, shouldering adult-level responsibilities, hardships, while still trying to earn a high school diploma. And the experience moved me and has stayed with me to this day. And in that moment, I knew that I wanted to support YODO however I could and become more involved as time would allow. YODO's mission also resonated with me on a personal level, because my mother always emphasized the importance of education. She believed it was one of the foundations for life. And so hearing how YODO helps students who are on their own stay in school and graduate really resonated deeply with me. And once I understood both the need and the effectiveness of Yodo's model, like I said, I knew I just had to get involved. And so what Yodo does is, as you mentioned, they support high school graduation and long-term success of youth experiencing homelessness. And what that looks like is providing academic stipends, financial incentives, which are tied to youth attendance to incentivize them to remain in school. We also provide basic needs. We distribute over 200,000 basic needs products to youth annually, and we support approximately 1,500 youth annually is what we're supporting currently right now. We are also not federally funded, so that's another unique aspect of Youth on Their Own is that all of the support comes from the generosity of the community. And so these are all middle and high school age students in Pima County who are living on their own, not in the care of a parent or guardian, and are often couch surfing, which means that they are not stably housed. They're staying on couches of friends or other family members. And that's where Yodo steps in and provides stability and guidance to help them stay in school and graduate.
1,500, it's often said that quite often these are the youth that are not visible, because you mentioned some of them stay with friends, they couch surf, they might go from house to house. Nobody sees what's going on with them. How does Yodo connect their services with these young men and women?
Most high school, so I'll back up one step and say that Yodo is about to celebrate its 40th anniversary next year. So we started approximately 40 years ago at Amphi High School and now reach students in more than 100 schools across Pima County. And these schools have liaisons that work with program coordinators at Yodo that are employed by Yodo, and that's really the connection point to start providing services. I would also say that just amongst the youth themselves, we're pretty well known, and so word of mouth, but certainly the staff and the liaisons that are at the high schools are really the people that help bring the students to Yodo so that we can provide those services.
That's the voice of Monica Kern. She's on the board of directors for Youth on Their Own, or Yodo, as we like to go. If you want to find more information about Yodo, you can do so at yodo.org. That's yoto.org. We're going to take a quick break, but before we do, I want to mention that since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Green Things is on a lovely 13-acre site that is also home to Zocalo Village and all of those fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things on River Road, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, is on River Road, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, and it's also on the web at greenthingsaz.com as well as at zocalovillage.com. Green Things has been a longtime supporter of the Buckmaster Show, and we're happy to continue to share what the good things they do for our community. Stay with us through the break. We'll be right back with Monica Green, and we'll talk more about Yodo and the students and the success they've had by staying in school.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Attend an upcoming question and answer session hosted by the Regional Transportation Authority. To learn more about the proposed $2.67 billion regional transportation plan voters will consider next March. The proposed improvements, if approved, will reduce congestion and support cleaner air, enhance network reliability, safety, and efficiency. A half-cent tax to fund RTA Next, if approved, will replace the current tax, resulting in no change in the current tax rate. The Q&A sessions, which are being held across the region, include in-person and virtual events. Learn more or sign up at RTANext.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I want to thank Brandon Croft for keeping the show rolling and keeping me, ensuring that I do all the things that Bill expects us to do when we get the honor of sitting in here on his show. The Buckmaster Show is broadcasting from Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, and the Buckmaster Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's via that live line that we are still joined by Monica Kern, a member of the board, as well as the finance committee for Youth on Their Own, or well known as YODO. So, Monica, you talked about 1,500 current homeless youth are using Youth on Their Own services and continuing to drive towards a high school graduation. How has the success rate been in the recent years on actually getting those students to graduation?
I'm glad you asked that, because I was going to mention that on my own. Our two-year average graduation rate is 91%. And to put that in perspective, the graduation rate for all of Pima County is 72%, and only about 43% of youth experiencing homelessness statewide without assistance of YODO graduate.
And does YODO stay in touch with the alumni, so to speak, of YODO, and or do they continue to support them beyond the high school graduation?
They do. They do. We offer alumni services. There is support and guidance for a path post-high school graduation. And in fact, right now, we're in the midst of conducting a longitudinal study for graduates between 1986 and 2020, I believe, to measure the long-term impact that YODO has had on its graduates.
Well, I don't want to gloss over that high school graduation rate. Like you said, 91%, and Pima County wide, it's barely over 70. And that shows that the students, they may be facing hardship, sometimes supporting their siblings as well through it, often many of them working. But without YODO, you hear stories time and time again that it would not be possible, in a large part because it lets people know that you care about them. So as a member of the finance committee, what is it that people can do to support YODO, and what are your concerns? I mean, we've had a government shutdown, we've had other issues. What, from your perspective of having that role, what are your current concerns, and how can people help?
My concerns, well, I'll start by saying that one of the biggest challenges that we're watching closely is uncertainty at the federal level, even though YODO does not receive federal funding, particularly around the McKinney-Vento Act, which ensures that students can stay in their school of origin, receive transportation, and access crucial support services. So with the plan to move the Department of Education under the Department of Labor, many advocates worry that oversight enforcement could weaken, because when federal protections become unstable, the impact lands hardest on the students who are already the most vulnerable. Youth homelessness is not decreasing. Even as statewide enrollment declines, YODO's enrollment has not seen that same level of decline, which indicates the percentage of students experiencing homelessness is staying steady or even increasing. Another challenge that I would say is competition for community support. Tucson is incredibly generous, but nonprofits of all kinds are working hard to meet rising needs. And as you stated, youth experiencing homelessness are often invisible. They're couch surfing, they're working jobs, trying to hide what they're going through. But they want to be seen and they want to be heard, and they want a voice and they want a choice. And YODO's model supports students with dignity and autonomy. And so how listeners can help is through financial support. Gifts are to YODO are eligible for the Arizona Charitable Tax Credit, which is for 2025, $495 for individuals and $987 for people married filing jointly. People can also donate essential items, food, non-perishable food products, hygiene, school supplies. Find out how you can volunteer either at our donation center events or with expertise that you might provide to the board, and certainly any advocacy efforts for raising awareness or helping correct any misconceptions around youth experiencing homelessness are all ways that people can get involved and help.
So YODO's recently moved into their forever home. And that was a big movement. And Elizabeth Slater, the CEO of Youth on Their Own, truly does amazing advocacy and work. So any thoughts on the current setup and why that having a place like that is important and the benefits that the students get there that are just not the stipend?
The space that we have, which was made possible by a gift from the Angel Charity, which is also a local, very well-known Tucson institution, if you will, with a $750,000 gift about 2 years ago, I believe it was, helped us move into the current location off of Country Club, has a much larger footprint than the prior location, which allows us to stock better supplies for the youth. There are two separate spaces where youth can focus on homework, can meet privately. Just the space is much more inviting and conducive to supporting the youth and meeting them where they're at, if you will.
And I think under Elizabeth's leadership, you've also expanded their access to counselors and a safe space to meet and work with people. You mentioned the mini mall, which is huge. But even things as simple as a place to do their laundry. And a lot of times they don't have the support that allows them to actually enjoy and have the normal graduation experience. And YODO does that as well for them.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And just to speak a little bit also on Elizabeth herself, she is truly a phenomenal human being doing wonderful things in our community, impacting so many youth. She also recently graduated from the Flynn Brown Fellowship, which is provided. It's a program. It's nonpartisan, really for helping policymakers in Arizona collaborate and really help advocate in the spaces that they're in. It's a wonderful program. And really, I think that YODO has, to your point, had even a greater outreach through her leadership.
Well, I think a lot of that's been her leadership, but it's also been the members of the board. You've got an incredibly professional board that I think all your members are extremely dedicated. And there's also folks that serve on that board that actually were alumni. And I think that that's kind of one of the important things is you're going through that movement of establishing a relationship, not just with your current students that you're helping, but also the alumni afterwards and giving them an opportunity, teaching them to give back as well.
That's right. And just going back to giving everyone a voice and allowing them to participate.
So what is it, we've got about 3 minutes left. What has either occurred or what is it that you'd really want to see the next steps for YOTA to be and how they can make a difference?
Well, I would say to expand our footprint, which I know is something that's been under consideration for quite some time. So we're trying to strategize how to go about that. So if we could expand our footprint beyond Pima County, I think would be amazing. That would be my goal, my wish list.
Well, I know that's one of Elizabeth's as well. She'd like to see this go statewide and then maybe even bigger. I believe YOTA is the only one that does the direct substance or giving money to the students.
Academic stipends, you're right. That's absolutely correct.
And that makes them feel like they're in control of their lives.
That's right. Right. Yep.
Definitely makes a big difference on that. So I know you're on the finance committee, but the other thing that I think all nonprofits can use support is on the advocacy side. So is there anything with what kind of support do you have from either local elected officials or other leaders in the community?
Well, I know there's lots of collaboration. I can think even just last month, the board was had a panel of panelists from all over Pima County that help support our youth, that educate the board on how to make us better advocates. So I don't have one in particular in mind, but I know that there was just collaboration across the board, really.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's important for people to understand is, again, this is invisible. 1,500, probably scratching the surface?
Correct. Over the past 40 years, YOTA has helped more than 25,000 youth experiencing homelessness.
It kind of is a scary topic because when we talk about homelessness so much, we focus on what we see on the streets.
That's exactly right.
But with these students, they're goal-oriented. The ones that joined the program are absolutely goal-oriented. They want to succeed. They're looking for their next step in life. And it really is a unique thing that YOTA gives them that ability to do.
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that because the resiliency of these youth really is awe-inspiring. I think their circumstances can be seen as bleak. Certainly there's a lot of strife, a lot of challenges that they're dealing with. But the one thing that I would ask people to keep in perspective is that with the support provided by YOTA, we are helping these youth stay on a successful path to independence, and they're just so resilient. They just need our support.
And 91% graduation is pretty amazing. The number that have gone on to college is also incredible. And Monica, I want to thank you for joining us on the Buckmaster Show today, and I appreciate all you do to support youth on their own. And again, YOTA.org, you can find more information about it. So appreciate and wish you the best. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much, Todd.
All right, that brings us to a close here on the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Bill Buckmaster and myself, I want to once again thank Brandon Croft for keeping us on target, and I want to wish everyone a very happy Thanksgiving and a wonderful weekend. Take care, and Bill will be back on Monday.